All right, episode number 42, Gunshot. I'd only been in the Navy, I would say, about a year and a half. And I went in as a corpsman, kind of a medic of sorts, you know, 3 months of medical training. And my first duty station, this is before I went to the SEAL team, of course, was in Camp Pendleton. I was stationed there just outside of Oceanside, California, and great spot, good surf, all of that. But oh gosh, what was I at the time? Maybe barely 19 years old. And on Camp Pendleton, there's these what's called like branch clinics outside of the main hospital. Now, Camp Pendleton's a huge place. Okay, it's a Marine Corps base. And the Marines, they don't have their own medics. They rely on us. And on this base, in this clinic, you kind of serve a certain area of the base. And there's a few clinics on the base, as well as a massive hospital about 20 miles into Camp Pendleton, if I remember correctly. But I had just shown up there, and we'd gone through our EMT training because we ran ambulances out of that branch clinic, and all sorts of other things, just helping the Marines out, whether it's dehydration, they come in from their a long march or something, or stitches, ingrown toenails, all anything and everything at the branch clinic. And if it needed to go to the hospital, then we'd transfer them to the hospital. But on this base, I mean, there's a lot of Marines. I don't know the exact amount, but enough that require a massive hospital and branch clinic. So it was really big. I had just become an EMT, and so I was going through my certifications and things like that. And we had an ambulance that we cruised around in, and we got a call that there was a gunshot. And of course, something like that is like, wow. Well, wonder what it is. My partner and I, we jumped in the ambulance and headed off to the military housing. And, you know, this whole event happened so long ago, but I can replay it in my head like it was yesterday. If I ever had PTSD, you think I'd get it from the SEAL team and all of that kind of stuff, but this is what really sticks in my head. So we drive towards the military housing and lights on and all of that. We don't have many other reports coming in. It's not too far away from the clinic, maybe less than 5 minutes. And, we pull up and there's commotion around the house. It's right on the corner. And, as I'm stepping out of the ambulance, the military police are there and they're leading somebody out of the house in handcuffs. Looks like a young man, probably teenager. The scene's kind of chaotic already. There is a gunshot went off and this guy's getting let out in handcuffs. We grab our bags and we're the first medical people on scene. Usually the fire department will beat us there, but we happen to be there first. We run in. And there's family there. There's a commotion of people, and there, lying on the floor, is a 16-year-old girl, and she's gasping for breath. She's looking at us, and you know, just in that way of just terror. And I can remember at that moment, I absolutely had no idea what to do. I forgot all of my training, what little that I did have to deal with this kind of situation. It wasn't like, you know, you hear gunshot and like, oh, there's gotta be blood, all that. No blood, just somebody lying on the ground and, in obvious pain and, can't breathe, or appears that she's just really struggling. And I think my partner, I kind of froze, for what seemed like a long time, but it must have been just a couple seconds as we stepped in. We came in there, knelt down beside her, and she's struggling. We're trying to figure out, you know, people are saying that her boyfriend had shot her, that sort of thing. But where, we don't know. We don't see any blood. Hoping it was on an extremity or an arm or a leg to where we could tourniquet something. And we opened up her shirt, and just above her kind of net left breast was a small hole. And again, no blood. It wasn't a messy scene or anything like that. And first thing, you know, it's just like, wow, there's obviously what looks to be a gunshot hole in her chest. No other exit wound that we could tell. We gotta seal this wound up, because what happens is air goes into the lung into the space between the lung and the chest, and it'll actually collapse that lung from the pressure. And so what you have to do is put what's called a chest seal over that. And I felt like everything was just moving in slow motion. I mean, you can imagine the situation with a family around, with, you know, you're there to save somebody's daughter. And our bag was open, and it's just chaos. There's stuff everywhere because you're looking for that chest seal. But, of course, you can't find it right away, so you're digging around everywhere for this thing. I'm already sweating. You're trying to help somebody who's, you know, just struggling from getting shot. And I've never seen anything like this before. Never experienced this. It's just a tense situation. And what felt like an hour to find this chest seal probably was less than a couple seconds. Put the chest seal on, hoping that works. And I can remember my partner, he looked up at me and said, "We got to get her out of here." There's, you know, in our mind, he didn't say it, of course, but there's nothing we can do. We gotta get her to the hospital. This, you know, there's nothing else we can do here. Because there, like I said, there was no exit wound. There was no blood. We just want to try to keep her lungs functioning, keep that air from getting inside the chest cavity there and pressing in on the lung. What was surreal to me is she wasn't saying anything. She was just looking at us and struggling a little bit, but still conscious, still breathing from what I could tell, still had a pulse. Everything was okay there. And so, there was a lot of hope. The family, what I could tell from around me, was there. You know, we get her on the gurney. I think my partner ran out there to get the gurney, or maybe it was right outside the door because we brought it with us. I can't really remember that part, but we got her onto the gurney that will go into the ambulance, and got her on there. And we were in such a rush. I don't even think we buckled her down, because really it was, let's get her. We got to get her to the hospital. This is serious. We're running out to, not running, but we're moving really quickly out to the ambulance. And it seemed like a struggle to get her into the ambulance. And anytime you're not with the patient, you're wondering what's going on. Is, you know, we need to take her vitals. At that time, we didn't even take the time to put an IV in right there on scene. That was the next step, is get an IV in. Well, there's only two of us, right? Somebody has to drive, and I'm in the back with her. We loaded her in, closed the doors. Can't even remember if I brought the med bag with me, because it was just, you know, such a rush to move out of there. Inside the back of the ambulance, still she has this piercing stare kind of at me, at the situation, what's going on. I pull out a bag of an IV, a lactate ringers. I'd hang it up. I'd large bore IV quickly. I was actually pretty good at that. So I got that going to replace any blood loss that was happening. And and then she doesn't have a pulse. And again, I felt her neck And I yelled at my partner, she doesn't have a pulse. And we haven't even left. We haven't driven out of there. The family's around the ambulance. And he gets out and crawls back with me because we have to start CPR. That's just kind of the next thing that you do, right? I mean, no pulse, still staring, it seemed like into my soul to save her. You could hear her parents outside, kind of in a frantic scream. I could hear prayers outside. And they're wondering why isn't this thing moving? Cause you couldn't really see inside what was happening. My partner opened up the back door and I had started chest compressions. If you've ever done chest compressions, especially on somebody that is in cardiac arrest, you feel like you're breaking their ribs almost. I think I felt a couple of ribs snap because, I mean, you're amped up. You're trying to save somebody's life. And it was just a difficult situation. My partner moved to where her head was and started rescue breaths with what's called an ambu bag to put over her mouth to make sure she's getting oxygen. I'm continuing chest compressions. And at the time, we had another person come to the ambulance and like, hey, we need to call Life Flight. Like, we can't wait. We got to get a helicopter here. The hospital, like I said, it's like 20 miles away. And, I'm continuing to do chest compressions. My partner's, giving her oxygen and, you know, gosh, you can imagine that scene, you know, just the parents seeing into the back of the ambulance, seeing their daughter being worked on and for the most part, lifeless at that time. When you see somebody getting a CPR on them, it's not a good situation. It really doesn't normally turn out well. Anyway, somebody else had got the vehicle moving. I don't remember if it was a firefighter or another paramedic or somebody, but we had another medical personnel come in. And I think it was actually a nurse, could have been a PA or a doc. I'm not sure. Way more medical experience than me. Kind of took over the scene. Hey, I already called Life Flight. Helicopter's coming. We need to drive to the baseball field. It's right there. On board the helicopter is advanced medical care. A doctor, I think, was on there. Anyways, it's just a couple blocks away. That made a lot of sense rather than driving the, you know, 20 plus miles to the hospital and with us. Anyway, the helicopter came really fast. We pulled out of where we were at the house. I'll never forget looking over my shoulder and through the window and seeing was her dad kind of running after the ambulance. And he was saying, hold on, you can make it, honey. You can do this. Make it. And here I was doing chest compressions on this young teenager that, for all intents and purposes was kind of lifeless. I kept checking for a pulse. We kept doing the CPR as we're driving to the ball field. And we get there. The helicopter has landed. There's a softball game going on at the time. You know, it's just a chaotic scene. And we stopped chest compressions for just a second to pull, because we had parked, we needed to pull her out to just transfer her to the helicopter. I believe it was a doctor on board the helicopter that came from the hospital. They had rushed over and we continued chest compressions right there. There was no sense getting in the helicopter. I forget what the what the medication, not medication, but the IV injections were, probably adrenaline, anything to get the heart started again. And, you know, it is futile. We kept doing CPR. I couldn't really do much more, but there was nobody to switch out with at the time. And I guess, you know, when you see in those movies where the doctor kind of steps back and you're kind of looking around at each other, we'd been doing CPR for probably 7 to 10 minutes at that point, at least. No pulse, no signs of life. And we didn't want to stop, though. You don't want to stop. The family had come down to where the helicopter was. And you can imagine the scene. There's all these softball players. There's a kid's softball game. Everybody's wondering what's going on. We have this poor little girl out in front of everybody. And at that time, we all knew that we were doing chest compressions and CPR and doing all this, and she was gone. The doctor at the time spoke to us and said, "Hey, keep doing what you're doing, I know, but let's move her back into the ambulance. Keep doing CPR. We're not going to stop right here in front of everybody." And he came into the ambulance with us. And yeah, she was dead. We got in the ambulance, closed the doors, and he pronounced her right there. And we didn't. We got to the point where we're like, no, let's keep doing something. This whole family's here. How do we stop? He said, no, it's over. Let's move, or let's drive to the clinic. Let's drive out of here. But no, she's dead. And so he physically had to like grab our arms to stop. And I remember stopping and then leaning forward to keep trying to do CPR, right? You can't just sit and look at this poor little girl and her whole family. And at that point, she's completely undressed, cut off all of her clothes. At some point that had happened, I don't remember. And it was just the worst situation. Back to the clinic because it was closer. And there was this moment in time where we parked at the clinic. I'm in the back with the little girl, and I can't remember her name at the time. It's just terrible. But I remember sitting there and going, why did this happen? What? I couldn't save her. There's nothing we could do to save her. What we didn't know at the time is that the bullet that had struck her chest had gone through her lung, bounced off her rib. And this is all found out in autopsy, of course, but it bounced off her rib and shot down through her diaphragm and through a major artery into her stomach. And that's why we didn't see an exit wound. It was a small caliber bullet. I think it was a .22, a little handgun that her boyfriend had just shot her, that was getting taken out of the house in handcuffs. And because it nicked a major artery, she bled out very, very quickly. What I didn't notice as we were doing CPR is her stomach was filling up with blood, and she bled out pretty quickly right there. But there was a moment in time when I was in the back of the ambulance, and I was, why does this happen? Why does this horrible thing happen to these good people? And I sat there, I covered her up with the blanket that we had, and for a while we waited for the coroner to show up, nothing happened. Kind of sat there in silence, and I just had a feeling of loss and just denial about the whole thing. There's nothing in my training that helped me save her. I mean, obviously, I didn't know at the time that there was really nothing to do. I mean, I think if she'd been shot right next to the hospital, even moving her into surgery probably wouldn't have saved her. But it was just the finality of it all. And that situation, more than anything, I guess just stuck in my brain as kind of the first loss of life that I had ever witnessed right in front of me. And not only that, but had a hand in trying to save, but just couldn't. And that stuck with me, you know, as I moved on in my career. And just knowing how fragile life is and how it can be just taken away from you at any moment. And, you know, seizing those opportunities that that you do have with your friends, with your family, and taking advantage of life, because it's so fleeting. I never did it was probably pretty impossible to do, but connect with the family. Or I felt a lot of shame afterwards. Hey, we couldn't do anything. There wasn't much counseling done. It was okay, let's move on to the next day. But it really stuck with me. I mean, even now, I could still see her face and her eye, the way she was looking at me. So that is, the lessons I've learned from that is, like I said, the fragility of life. Sometimes bad things happen to good people, and just shit happens. And to move on from it, how did I move on from it? Well, talking about it, being able to process that, you know, finding out what exactly happened to her after the coroner's report. I think that gave me a little bit of relief that, oh, it's not something you screwed up. It was a desperate situation right from when she got shot. And that was the first time I dealt with something like that. And hopefully you never have to deal with something like that. But when life hands you a just complete shit sandwich, you know, it's just going to happen. Maybe it not at that extreme level. But I know what could have made it worse is, you know, just not talking to anybody about it, or being able to find out what happened, what really happened afterwards. I wish I would have followed up on what happened to her boyfriend. I'm sure he went to prison for life. He's probably still there now. But being able to move on from that and gain strength from it, you know, and I still kind of have it as a failure point, you know, and something I never want to have happen again. But life throws you those curveballs, and you got to take them, and you got to move on. So there you go, episode 42. Hope you enjoyed it.